Welcome back to This Week in College Football, presented by CFB Talk Daily. Today, we've got our Week 0 recap. Going to touch on UConn versus Utah State, Illinois versus Wyoming. We're also going to hit Nebraska versus Northwestern and Vanderbilt versus Hawaii. All right, so do you want to do Illinois-Wyoming first?
Yeah, we can start there.
All right.
I think that – wait, is it still recording, right?
Yep, still going.
All right. Yeah, I think that Brett Bielema is – I think he's back. I think that Illinois is a perfect program for him to implement what he's trying to do. I love that they're just – they're trying to be the Wisconsin of the Big Ten East.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think they could do that there.
It really is awesome looking at, like, they had – they mixed in multiple running backs and really got after it. I mean, Chase Brown obviously was the star of the show with over 150 yards, but you still had Reggie Love rush for 46, Josh McCray go for 33, and Chase Hayden go for 28. I mean, that I do love that example of them being the Wisconsin of the Big Ten East. I think that, like you said, Brett Bielema is back, and it's kind of an exciting thing to see that Illinois could be a legit spoiler in the Big Ten this year instead of just kind of getting walked over, which they kind of have been the past few years. I think that's definitely an exciting thing to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously, you know, I'm a Rutgers fan. I'm in the Big Ten East. Illinois is the only team that we look to like, kind of gauge ourselves, because I think we could beat Illinois around there. And it's impressive to see what Bielema is doing, because they don't have the most talented guys. Mm-hmm. They just have a bunch of guys who fit into a system, and it's working.
Yep. Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that's kind of how – with the SEC, you really need talented guys. With Big 12, you need really talented guys. I think the Big 10, you see a lot of teams get successful with a couple very talented guys and then a lot of guys that just fit a perfect system. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what Illinois has right here with their ensemble cast, their running backs, and then their receivers that could be – possible one big play guys during a game, but really aren't going to be your first option. I think that could lead them to maybe a 6-6, 7-5 year, but play spoiler to a team like a Michigan State down the line, or a team that really does have hopes of making kind of like an NY6 bowl. I think that they could really be kind of the bowl in the China shop in the Big Ten this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time on Illinois, but I will say that I was impressed by Tommy DeVito, because yes. I've been a naysayer at some times, but he played pretty much about – I know it's only Wyoming, but he played a pretty good first game in the system, and that's always good.
Yeah, I mean, he was super efficient. I think 10 or 11 incompletions yesterday and no interceptions. I mean, that's going to win you big – that's going to win you games in the Big Ten if you're just that consistent, where you don't turn the ball over – and you really just stick consistent. You don't need to light up the statue. You just got to be consistent. And Tommy DeVito, I think, is the perfect guy that could just be consistent for Illinois.
Yeah, and that's all they needed, too, because last year they had Brandon Peters last year, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Peters wasn't even that bad, but he was too average. They had Art Sitkowski as well, and another Rutgers throwback, but he's not the guy. So I think that having DeVito there, if they can go make a bowl game with him, it's a big step in the right direction.
That would be huge. That would really be huge for them. All right, you want to hit Hawaii-Vanderbilt?
Yeah, Hawaii-Vanderbilt. So we tweeted our spread picks. Mm-hmm. I, you know, foolishly thought Hawaii was going to be able to cover, but apparently I was very wrong.
Well, I fell into the same boat with picking Wyoming. I believe it was just a very. I was like, you know what? I like these Cowboys. Let's see if they can. Let's see what they can do for me. And didn't really pay off. But yeah, I mean, how shocked were you that Vanderbilt just came out and really just absolutely destroyed them? I mean, it was, to me, I thought it was pretty wild. I know Hawaii's not a top-tier program, might be one of the is one of the worst in college football. But for Vandy to go out there and beat them by 50 is just, I think, quite amazing.
Yeah, I think that it was a big step for Vanderbilt, definitely, because you need, you know, a team that has really bad seasons over and over, it's so easy to get stuck in, like, a losing environment and, like, complacent with it, you know, like, just accepting it's not going to change. So being able to go out there, even if it's a team that everyone else knows is bad, It feels really good to beat them by like 40 or 50 because you're supposed to.
Right. Yeah. I honestly think that just showed off like the SEC difference. While Vanderbilt gets knocked around the SEC, they still go out there and just beat the brakes off of a team that they really should. I mean, 63 points is against anybody is impressive. So that was exciting because, you know, again, it would be cool. Like, I like seeing the teams that aren't very good kind of become just get a little bit better. Like we kind of mentioned with Illinois, they haven't been very good the past few years. If they can be good, that would be fun. If Vanderbilt can be serviceable and play spoiler to a team like a Tennessee this year or to an Arkansas, it would be a pretty fun thing to watch.
Yeah, I think it also for Clark Lay, I think that's how you say his name. You know, that's a nice start. You know, 1-0, you're starting off on the right foot. You know, you probably gain a little more respect from your players. Like, okay, yep. He didn't come in and we lose our first game. Do we really buy into this guy?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And they're another team that got it done on the ground too. They had two guys go for almost over 100 yards each. Mike Wright had 163, and then you had Ramon Davis go for 87 yards. Both guys had – they both combined for three touchdowns. So, and then at quarterback, again, consistency is key. Mike Wright threw for just south of 150 yards, two touchdowns, and then only a handful of incompletions. So, again, it's against a team that they really should beat, and they did beat good. But, you know, again, you just got to be very consistent. That's the way you have to do things.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to move on to your program, UConn?
Oh, so I have a very large disdain for UConn football fans because I'm watching UConn play yesterday, and you know, I'm proud of them. It may sound corny to say, but I was proud to watch them not quit like they have in the past against, I think, a good Utah State team. They won the Mountain West last year by a lot against San Diego State. And you see UConn fans complaining on Twitter about a game like this where I'm pretty pumped because you saw a lot of guys kind of come out of their shell and a lot of guys from the transfer portal kind of work out very well. I mean, on the ground, again, they got it done. Through the air, they didn't really do anything at all. And I was kind of surprised to not see Taquan Robertson playing as much. I thought Zion Turner needs to be better if they're going to win games. But, you know, it's a start. I'm fine with it. I don't know. It sucks that Robertson got injured, but, you know, it was a good start for UConn, I should say.
Yeah, Robertson was injured. I talked to him after the game a little bit, so I hope he gets healthy. I saw that is it Keelan Marion? He got hurt as well. Mm-hmm. But there was one player who really impressed me because I was watching UConn just because there weren't many games on yesterday. It was Nathan Carter.
Yep.
He was impressive. You know, UConn has a guy who they could maybe ride. You know, I thought they weren't going to win a game this season. He's a guy they could maybe ride to, you know, at least beating. They play Central Connecticut State, I think, and maybe one or two other games because he was that good.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. He's going to be their kind of their workhorse. I think for them to beat a team, I think they should beat Central. I think they will beat Central. But if they want to beat a team that like an FIU down the line or a Ball State or even UMass in general, they need to establish the pass just better just so they're not going to put Carter into the ground by giving him 30 carries a game. I just think that has to be better. But, yeah, Carter was really impressive. I think defensively you saw two guys that I thought were going to be the big leaders really step up with Jackson Mitchell and Ian Swenson. Both had over 10 tackles. Mitchell had a sack. So I do just think this was the right step for this program and was really huge in them kind of working their way not back to where they were prior, because that's going to be very tough where you're playing in the Fiesta Bowl, but just being a team that's not the laughing stock of college football.
Yeah, I think I know I said this about the last two teams too, but yesterday, I don't want to overreact, but that could be a big step for UConn. Now, you were supposed to lose by, I think it was 41 points, and
yeah,
you didn't. You kept it.
Spread.
Yeah, they kept it around, you know, for quite a while. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah, and for I wasn't really able to watch a ton of like the first quarter. And I kept getting updates. I saw that UConn was up 14-0. I was so excited. And then I was able to watch a bit of the second quarter, where Utah State kinda came back, had 24 unanswered points. But overall, I was happy about it. I think if you're a real UConn fan, you should be happy about the outcome of that. Obviously, you want to walk away with a win, but taking that against, I think, a pretty good Utah State team is not bad. Not a bad start to the year. All right, now, and then, so the big game, the final big one, the one that really opened up the college football season was Nebraska versus Northwestern in Dublin, Ireland. And for the first quarter, I thought that I wasn't going to go as far as a lot of the Nebraska fans on Twitter and be like, this team is going to win a national title this year. But I thought Casey Thompson was the real deal. And I still thought he looked very good throughout the game. But I was like, wow, this Nebraska team is really going to impress a lot of people and turn some heads. And that was disappointing to me because I don't like Scott Frost and I don't like Donovan Raiola. So that was going to be a tough pill for me to swallow. But Nebraska did what they've done the past few years and just absolutely blew whatever lead they had and let this Northwestern team crawl back into the game and end up beating them. So I was excited to watch Northwestern win. I don't know how you felt.
I was excited just because football is back. But I'm going to give a quick – I don't think people were riding Scott Frost, I think, a little too hard for this loss. And yeah. I'm a notorious Scott Frost naysayer, so that means a lot for me. But yeah. I think there was like one or two plays that lost in this game. One of them was Frost's fault. The other was not. So he called the onside kick to give when they were up 11, which gave Illinois a short field. I disagree with it. He disagreed with it after the game. He said if he had it back, he wouldn't do it again. But he didn't give up 11 straight points twice. Like, he didn't blow two 11-point leads. One of them, sure, he might have helped giving them a short field, but that defense was so bad. They were getting no push up front. And I swear there was about 10 plays in a row where Northwestern just called inside zone.
It was – well, and to start the game off, I thought the Nebraska defense looked pretty strong, and I really wanted Northwestern to run the ball. So I think they've got the best tackle in all of college football with Peter Skoronski. So I was like, you really need to pound the rock. And Nebraska was kind of stopping them in the first quarter. So I thought this was going to be a long day for Northwestern. And then everything just kind of opened up for Northwestern. Like you said, they just kept calling like inside zone, mid zone. And we're breaking off really nice runs. So that Nebraska defense, their gas tank was either really bad or they came out just way too hot, but just overall that defense looked just atrocious. So it was so bad to see a team just run right up the gut on you.
Well, see, the problem was only the offensive line for Nebraska was vomiting 20 times a practice. The defense needed to be joining them, and then they would have been not gassed.
Yeah, just a wild headline that I think will be part of Scott Frost's departure at the end of the year. Like that just didn't help his case to keep a job as a college football coach with the Cornhuskers. What were your thoughts? I do want to talk about the onside kick a little bit, but what were your thoughts about Casey Thompson's Nebraska debut?
I think in the first half, he looked very well. He had that one play where he turned his back and then just threw it deep down the field. He had the pass to Carnady, I think his name is, and that was a dime, a back shoulder. So he had a good first half. In the second half, it seems like everything he did right in the first half, completely abandoned.
Yep. Yeah, it was he looked just so good in the first half, especially, like you said, the touchdown that he threw was awesome. And to see him still play somewhat consistent but just not to the level that he was and just kind of break down a little bit in the second half was pretty brutal. Because he's a guy, I like him as much as I don't like Nebraska. I do like Casey Thompson. So I would have been okay with him kind of being their success story. I mean, he even had a nice rushing touchdown where he put his body on the line in the first half for Nebraska. So he played with guts, even though he didn't play. He wasn't able to close out the game. But, yeah, that onside kick call I just think was so outrageous. And just – I mean, but it's also a kind of you're splitting hairs a little bit because it's like, if it works, then Frost is a genius. But when it doesn't work, it's just so bad.
Yeah, there's two things I wanted to touch on.
I think you muted yourself.
Oh, wait. Can you hear me?
Yep, I got you now.
Oh, right. One thing I wanted to add was, I don't know if you saw, but after the game, Northwestern's offensive line coach tweeted, and to think we only puked four times all camp.
I retweeted it. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
My favorite thing was, I think their guard, he replies and said, all four times were me, by the way.
It's so great. So great.
Yeah, that is too funny. One more Nebraska thing that I wanted to add was, I feel like the Scott Frost tenure is going to be decided by just his players just not doing enough to help him. Because, sure, that was a bad call, but that one call should not have lost in the game. I mean, sure, they blew an 11-point lead because of it, but that short field resulted in, I think, one touchdown. So that's 7 points. The defense gave him no help.
Yeah, it was – I just don't know what to do because, you know, Frost, they haven't been successful under Frost. And while the defense isn't helping them, it's just not a good look for Nebraska in general, kind of getting gashed the way that they did. And, you know, it'll be unfortunate if he loses his job, but it's just that's what's going to happen. Like you said, the players are in no way helping him at all keep his job.
Yeah. Actually, have one more quick thing to touch on. Did you see Pat Fitzgerald and the entire Northwestern team beers after the game? Football guy stuff. Yes.
No. Oh, my. That's Pat Fitzgerald. If you're a recruit, like, Pat Fitzgerald seems like the guy, one of the guys that you'd want to play for. Like, he just seems like an absolute dude of a coach. Just an absolutely high energy, a guy that played and was a very good player. And just seems like he treats his players right. That's a guy you definitely would want to play for, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. He seems like the guy, he cares about his players. And, like, sure, you may not have 8-9 win seasons, but you're going to be in every game. And they have such a talent differential with other Big Ten teams because it's so hard to get into Northwestern. That's impressive to even hang around with most of those teams.
Yeah. So how do you think this game, I know it's early, it's week zero, but this watching both Northwestern and Nebraska, how do you think that kind of paints the picture a little bit for the Big Ten, for the teams that aren't named Ohio State or Michigan? What did you say before?
All right, so I said, I'm not sure if you saw, but Kirk Herbstreit predicted Nebraska to win the Big Ten West.
Yep.
So I said that's off to a pretty cold start.
That's not. I don't know what's worse, is that prediction or Herbstreit's his tan that he had, his spray tan was where he looked just like an orange. That's an awful take. Just even if Nebraska wins this game, I just don't think that's a good take overall to have them winning the Big Ten West. So it's this game just makes it way worse for Herbstreit in that pick. But I think it's a ballsy one, but I think that's more of him trying to drum up some attention more than him actually believing that.
I hope so. There's actually one last quick topic if you have the time to cover.
Yeah.
Did you see Desmond Howard's playoff prediction?
I did see Desmond Howard's playoff prediction. I was actually just thinking about that. It's outrageous. It's quite unbelievable for somebody to have that as their playoff prediction. He had so A&M, Pittsburgh, Baylor, and Michigan. Do you think any of those teams make the playoff? I think your mic cut out again.
I think Michigan repeats as a playoff team.
Okay. Okay.
I think A&M is fool's gold.
They're the only one I see as a team that makes the playoffs.
Yeah, I think A&M is fool's gold.
Yep, again.
Pitt, I don't know how they become a playoff team after losing Kenny Pickett and their offensive coordinator. But
and
Jordan Addison. Yeah, I'm not sure how that makes them a playoff team, but...
The only one, if I had to rank like who I think, I'd put Michigan 1, probably Baylor 2, but not a very close to Michigan. I really, they returned some defensive guys, especially the big one being Seka Ika, but that's not enough for them to come out of the Big 12, I don't think. Or at least be impressive enough to make the playoff. I don't know if this is him really believing it or him going for the clickbait story and the clickbait headline.
True. I hope College Game Day isn't going in the like the hot take kind of direction.
Yeah, you don't need that. That's not what it's there for. It's there for experts to kind of break down the games and give their expert opinions. I mean, that's why they're there. It's not, this isn't First Take. You don't have Stephen A. and Mad Dog Russo going at it. So you really don't need that at all. I don't want these guys going for the clickbait headlines. I want guys actually breaking down the games and kind of giving what they really think is going to happen in the playoff or who they think is going to win games versus getting clicks. I just think this is an outrageous playoff prediction. One that's, if, like you said, Michigan's the only team I could see making it. And the Pittsburgh pick is crazy to me because I think Clemson and at least NC State finish ahead of them in the ACC and maybe a few other teams, but I just don't see Pitt being like that team that can make a run and be undefeated and make the college football playoff.
Yeah, no, neither do I. I completely agree.
And then, like you said, you hit the nail on the head, Texas A&M being fool's gold. They feel like that every year where they get ranked pretty high in the preseason poll and then lose. They'll have an impressive win against like an Alabama like they do every few years and then lose a few pretty bad games. And that's their prerogative just about every year for Texas A&M football.
Yep, it is.
And again, their schedule is pretty difficult too. I mean, they play Miami, Arkansas, Alabama, Ole Miss, Florida. So, I mean, they don't have an easy path to even making the college football playoff. So, I just overall, an awful, awful, awful pick for Howard there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that was a little nuts. But I think we should maybe end it here. You're going to hear from me and every Monday, probably, we're going to aim for it, right? Try to record on Sunday nights.
Yeah, that's perfect. I love the recap's always good. Going over, I'm super pumped for week one. There's a lot of big games to go over.
Oh yeah.
Not to cut into Sonny and Eric's preview. The one game that does intrigue me is I just want to get your quick take on the Florida Utah game. How do you think that plays out?
I think Utah beats them by double digit scores.
I believe I'm in the same camp as you.
No, actually, I don't mean double-digit scores, my bad. That'd be like 10-plus. I mean, like two. Yeah, double-digit points.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. And it'll be so great in front of the sellout swamp. It'll be so great.
Yeah, I think Utah gets the Pac-12 a little respect, though. I think they beat Florida.
Yeah. But, so this was This Week in College Football presented by CFB Talk Daily. This was our Week 0 recap. Make sure you tune in this week as we have our week one preview with Sonny and Eric.